This is the Unbreakable Stories podcast, where we share stories of people just like you who have overcome adversity, struggles, hardship, and the setbacks in life on your way to achieving success. It is through these unbreakable stories that will motivate, inspire, encourage, and empower you to believe if it's possible for someone else, it is possible for you. And now, here is your host for this episode of Unbreakable Stories, Terry Thompson.
Today's guest, Bonnie Hewitt. Bonnie was struck with a rare illness over a decade ago that left her paralyzed. It attacked her immune system and attempted to take her out. Thankfully, it did not. And over the last 10 years, she has been diagnosed with multiple chronic health conditions, but nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, is stopping her from becoming who she is really meant to be. Now she's helped more than her body and mind, but also her soul. She started a business, and with her winning pitch on David Meltzer's two-minute drill, she won $50,000 in cash and prizes. She is currently scaling her apparel business, Posh Notions, learning to build her upcycling business, writing her first book, and helping others manage and calm their anxiety with what she has learned. She is also raising her kids, continuing to heal, protecting her energy, and enjoying her favorite dark coffee. I love coffee too, by the way. She is making her way a little every single day, and she is here to show you that no matter what happens in life, you cannot and you absolutely must not let life get in the way of living. Welcome to the show, Bonnie Hewitt.
Thank you so much for having me. That was fabulous. I love your energy.
Yeah, like, I appreciate it. Yeah, so tell me a little bit more. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. I know we tried talking a little bit earlier about it. So tell me a little bit more about your illness and how it affects you.
So it's called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And as I was telling you, I still have to look up how to spell it because it's some fancy French word or something. So August 2011, so almost a full decade ago, it kind of hit me out of nowhere. And it left me temporarily paralyzed. I was in the hospital for several weeks. They thought I had taken a drug overdose when they first found me because I could hear and feel everything, but I couldn't respond or move at all.
Oh, wow.
So the first few days was pretty rough because while they were ruling that out, I wasn't being treated very nicely. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. And so the next couple of weeks, They took, you know, diagnosing and trying to treat it, and then eventually ended up on the rehab floor learning how to walk and talk, and it was like having a stroke. So all my motor skills were gone. My reflexes were gone. In fact, they didn't end up letting me go until I had, you know, the doctor comes in and tap. So my reflexes were acting semi-normal a few weeks later. And then I came home and honestly tried to go back to my old life. I was like, oh, that was a blip. Let's kind of move on. And that wasn't necessarily the healthiest thing that I possibly could have done. I didn't give myself time to heal. And really just kind of wanted to forget the whole thing happened, honestly. But it was definitely I call it the first part of my healing journey. It was, should have been a huge wake up call. And it really wasn't. And I said it in all honesty, because like I said, I tried to go back to my old life. And before that, when I got sick, I was a single mom raising my two kids. They were 9 and 11 at the time. My oldest was on the spectrum. He was had heavy services coming in our house six days a week. I was working from home as an accountant. It was summertime. I wasn't taking care of myself. I was pumping caffeine, not just coffee, like tons of caffeine. Wasn't eating, like I really just wasn't taking care of myself. And that should have been the wake up call, like, hey, my body, I explain it as like a surge protector, was like, nope, we're done. You're not doing this anymore, because if you keep going this way, you're not gonna survive. But it really wasn't the wake up call initially, because like I said, I was just oblivious. And I was so used to just plowing through everything that came my way, to a fault in this case, that I didn't look at it as, hey, you need to take better care of yourself. It was, hey, I'm just going to try to jump back into everything. Uh-huh. And that failed miserably, honestly. I ended up having to leave my job. So that was
You know, that sounds absolutely stressful. It really does, because I know that, and overwhelming as well, too. I mean, there's a few things that I can relate to. I mean, I myself, you know, I was in the military and I have PTSD. I can relate to some different things that I experienced, but my goodness, having that experience right there and then having to, like, you know, learn how to rebuild and learn how to, you know, learn how to do things all over again like that. Like, what was that process like for you? I mean, when it's like, okay, you know, because for some people, you know, like, okay, I want to walk, put one, you know, one foot in front of the other, having to learn how to do things, whatever the case may be. So what was, you know, that takes a strong mindset as well too. So what was kind of going through your mind as you was trying to, you know, redo things like that?
At first, I just wanted to get the hell out of the hospital. Mm. Like, honestly, I was just like, they're telling me, you know, it's going to take this much and it's going to take that much and it's going to take you 6 months or more to heal. And we just need to get you to this point. And it was like, so I was doing as much pushing myself as hard as I possibly could in the hospital. It's interesting because you're the first person to actually ask me that. And now thinking about it, about halfway through my hospital stay was when I got a migraine one day and they gave me, I think it was like Imitrix or something. And all of a sudden my entire body felt like it had a migraine, like everything hurt so bad. And that was really the beginning of my chronic pain. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was related or if it just kind of activated it or what happened, or just coincidence, but it was super hard. I mean, I just wanted to go home to my kids and go back to my life. But what made it even more interesting was once I finally did get home and I was having physical therapy come to the house, I wasn't allowed to drive. I couldn't drive, but I wasn't allowed to drive. I was crawling up my steps to get to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I couldn't lift to cook. Like, I couldn't lift a pot of water to cook anything. All my strength had was gone. And I remember going to the doctors a couple of months later for some follow-up neurology stuff and them going, oh, well, you couldn't have possibly had this because you wouldn't be able to do X, Y, and Z. In my mind, I was like, okay, great, I don't have this. But it actually caused a lot of problems because then the next 6, 12, 3 years, they're trying to figure out what the hell was wrong with me. And I really think that I had just been so determined to push through all of that and make as much progress as fast as I could that the telltale things they look for 2 months after the fact just weren't there.
Right.
And so I just, like I said, it wasn't like a conscious thing for me. It was just kind of the way I had always done things, you know, after trauma and after a loss. And like, I kind of sometimes skipped the grieving process and was just like, okay, I've got kids to take care of and I've got this and this and this to do, which definitely did end up causing some problems down the road. But that was just how I did things. It was plow through. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. And it was, a lot of the time it felt like need. It was really a survival thing that kind of kicked in, to be honest with you. It was like, I have to pay bills. I have to take care of my kids. I need to do this. In order to do all of these things, I need to be able to move, you know? So that's, I think, my drive at that point was my kids and just getting back to what I wanted to be doing.
And that's important that you say that, because that leads into your why, like why you must do certain things. So when you tie what it is that you do to a bigger why, that's a forcing function to the actions that you take every day. And I think that's very important when you can tie your actions to a why. And, you know, what one key point that you hit on there was medication. And I think that kind of serves as a mask to what's really going on as well, too. And I think that's a huge problem that we face out there within the medical world, because in the medical world, they're quick to come up with not necessarily maybe a diagnosis so that they can push medication. And I know I struggled with that immensely. I was in the military for 24 years. I'm 100% disabled veteran. I used to self-medicate all the time with just all these different things just to mask the pain. And I struggled to get past that because I didn't really know that anything was there. You know what I'm saying? And that was the reason why I asked that question. Like, what was going through your mind when you was trying to rebuild, rehabilitate, you know, go through those things, especially when it comes to medicating, because a lot of times that serves as a mask and you really don't know there is a problem. So I think that causes a struggle to rehabilitate, to get better, to make progress, you know, with that mask.
I have a lot to say about that. I'll make it brief. My mental health history way preceded my physical health history. Way back when I was a child, I was struggling with, I was labeled high strung. I was, you know, they thought I had ADHD at one point, anxiety, depression. I had some trauma as a child and then all the way up and through my child or my adulthood. And I was medicated at 17 for what I thought were stomach problems. And I trusted my mom, I trusted my doctor. And here they, I found out a few years later, they were antidepressants, which did help my stomach because it was alleviating the anxiety. In 2017, which I kind of call the second part of my healing journey, I was on over a dozen different medications, psych medications. And I was having problems with anger and rage and irritability. And I had been complaining about the irritability and anxiety for years, obviously, because it had been 2 decades almost at that point. And went into my doctor for the millionth time and said, hey, I'm having a problem with this. And I can't, you know, what can we do about this? And he had been upping this one and downing that one and changing to this med for over a decade and a half at that point, 15 years. And he said, well, it could be this one meg that you were, you're taking. And I'm like, I've been taking that medication for 15 years and I've been complaining about these same problems for the past 15 years. And I told him I quit. I was like, I'm done. And I don't recommend anybody do this, but I did quit all of my psych meds in a matter of like a month because I was like, I can't keep doing this. This is, and at that point I took responsibility and took my power back, but I did find myself going, I don't know who I am. Like people, what do you do for fun? I don't know. I play with my kids. What do you like? I don't know. Like I had been so, part of it's also people pleasing in me, but a lot of it had to do with the medication was I was always just trying to keep things at an even keel. So whether it was myself and my anxiety, whether it was my kids or my husband or people like that all fed into that. I was always just doing kind of what everybody else wanted to do to keep them happy so that I could feel calm. Basically, and not anxious about stuff all the time. And I definitely, over the past 3 years, three, four years, I've been just trying to figure out who the hell I am and what it is that I want to do. Like, I spent my whole adult life medicated, basically. And yeah, so that mask, I wasn't, I think for me, it was more of, I just wanted to feel okay. I just wanted to feel okay. And it wasn't, it was masking, but my it wasn't like my intention to mask. My intention was I just wanted to be a calm, even keel, not anxious mess all the time kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I guess that is it's a form of masking. And that's what the medication does, unfortunately, is it doesn't just numb the parts we don't like. It numbs the parts that, you know, that of us, like the good parts and the bad parts. Like I remember this is kind of funny and off. Somewhat off topic, but I was pregnant with my fourth, I think, and I had stopped a bunch of medication because I was pregnant. And I don't know if you remember this Mucinex commercial with that big nasty monster thing with like goo dripping all over his face. And I remember every time it would come on, all of a sudden my stomach would just start churning. And like, I didn't know why I was, all of a sudden I was so reactionary to this. And on top of that, horror movies used to be my favorite. Like all my, if I was picking a movie, it was going to be a horror movie. And all of a sudden I couldn't even watch the previews anymore. And it was because I had like basically unnumbed all of those parts that were causing me to not be afraid of these things. So those are just some interesting things that I kind of noticed about myself when I did back off the medications in different situations. But yeah, for sure. I agree with the mask.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit. So I just want to talk about David Meltzer. So, oh my goodness. I know David Meltzer and I'm connected to him in a way as well too. I'm a part of his private sales group. And he's an absolutely amazing person. So you were on the 2-minute drill. That's absolutely amazing that you had the opportunity to go on 2-minute drill with David Meltzer. So I watched that episode. It was a great episode. You know, watching the way that you pitched on there, it was amazing. And you only have 2 minutes. So right there in and of itself, 2 minutes doesn't really seem like a whole lot of time. And it goes by super fast. You know, I remember going through a drill one time to where we had 1 minute to do an elevator pitch of like, describe ourselves. Like, I want you to tell me everything that you can about Terry Thompson in 1 minute. And I'm sitting there like, oh my goodness, I can't even do that. So I know I can relate to how stressful it is to try to narrow things down to like the most important things to say during the pitch. So when you were going through that pitch, that 2-minute drill with David Meltzer, what exactly was going through your mind as you was talking, and how did you narrow that down to the most important things to say?
Oh, so just side note, I wasn't going to apply. David called me out during a private group session and was like, anybody hasn't applied, they need to do it. And that means you, Bonnie. So that's how I ended up on the show, because he called me out. I was like, I guess I'm going to apply now. So I was really riding on his belief in me, because I did not at any point in time think that I belonged there. But in writing my pitch, because I didn't want to let him down, right? That was honestly forefront of my mind a good bit of the times. Like, I can't embarrass him on global television. I didn't want to embarrass myself. I had no idea how to write a pitch. So I asked a lot of questions. I asked David a lot of questions. David has, as you know, a lot of guides that he gives away for free. He gives them away free on his Friday lives on Instagram. You can, you know, email him and he's happy to send you all this stuff. But specifically, he has, it's basically a pitch guide, and it has five, and I'm looking up here because my pitch is still hanging on my mirror. It has five. So there's, I'm going to forget them now. But like, there's credibility, emotional attachment, sharing your story, impact, capabilities. Maybe I did touch them all. I think that's all of them. Not in that order. So that's what I set out to do, because I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't have the sales figures. I didn't have NFL backers. I didn't have $1 million contracts. I didn't have any of this stuff. All I had was me. And my little Etsy shop that I had started like 8 months prior to this, or 6 months prior to this. And then the business, you know, apparel business that I was trying to grow. But what I was pitching was my upcycling idea. And so I told my story. I basically quickly told like where I came from, why upcycling was a part of my life, all of the stuff that I had gone through in a very short, you know, 2-sentence synopsis, basically building up and showing my persistence and perseverance through to show my character. And then told a little bit about how I got started in business. And then I told a story, a fictitious story about a little boy who, you know, whose clothes are tattered and worn. He's getting bullied at school, and how that really feels for him. And that was the really the, so I had emotional connection and attachment in several parts of my story from the very beginning all the way through to almost till the end. And really, I just wanted them to feel why this was so important to me. And that was, I think, what was really in my favor, was the ability to make that connection, make it early, make it super relatable. I know a lot of David's story. I know that he grew up with, you know, five brothers and sisters, and that his mom, I mean, he tells these stories all the time. And I wanted to kind of put a visual image in people's heads, something that everybody can relate to, which is bullying. A lot of us grew up, you know, without, or they know somebody that did. And then this is why I want to do this, and this is how I'm going to help these kids, and this is, you know, who else I'm going to be able to help in building this business. So for me, it was really what was going through my head was just doing the best I could. Like, there wasn't any real super strategy behind it. It was just, I'm just going to do the absolute best I could. And then I practiced with my camera 400 plus times. I practiced walking up and down my sidewalk hours a day, just repeating. And like, my neighbor was like waving to me. She's like, keep going. She's like nodding me on, you know, cheering me on, because she could see me mouthing words to myself. So yeah, that was, I honestly, there wasn't much going through my head, because I was almost being like in panic mode. I was like, I have 2 weeks to write this. And I had to study how to do it and then write it all in that period of time, with also with everything else that I had going on. So
that's awesome. So when you notified that you won, you know, how did that make you feel, and how did that change your life and your business?
It was so surreal. So you do find out when, while they're recording, but we're not allowed to tell. And I was so excited that I made the biggest mistake you could possibly make after being on a TV show. And I jumped on Instagram and did a 20-second video and blabbed to everybody that I had won.
Oh, no.
So just to give you an idea of what frame of mind I was in, I was completely just beside myself. God, I ended up getting a call from the team. They were like, you need to take that down. You weren't supposed to tell anybody. I was like, yeah, I guess that makes some sense. And Yeah, so it was very surreal. The next actual couple of months were very surreal. I was very much trying to figure out, like, how did I get here? Like, I didn't think, like I said, that I belonged there. Our power went out the morning of recording. I didn't get power back till like a half an hour before I recorded. My whole video is pixelated. You can see they ended up keeping it that way because our internet was so wonky because we got an ice storm. And it was like, everything was just like, no, 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 no. So to see my face pop up on that screen was like, I was ready to scream explicatives, like, holy, I was like, thank you. And I'm trying not to cry. I was so psyched. And it was funny because I almost had some reverse imposter syndrome after the fact. It was like, was that a fluke? How did I do that? Like, how did I pull this off? Is that something I'm going to routinely be able to do? Do I really belong in this life? Like, because I felt like I made this huge leap from down being down here to all of a sudden, I'm crawling to flying. And it's like, I had a lot to emotionally to unpack after that. But all in all, it was just such a great learning experience about what I could do when I put my mind to it, what I can do when I'm surrounded by the right people, what I can do when even I don't feel like I believe in myself, I still have like a pages up on my mirror too that say, you effing got this, just breathe, we got your back, the universe, like all these different affirmations. And I just kept repeating this stuff to myself along with my pitch over and over again. And so I managed to trick my brain into thinking I was, going to do this, and then it worked out in my favor. So it's been fabulous. And then I've got to meet so many amazing people because people want to share my story. I got interviewed for the paper, and I've gotten to make great connections because of that, that I might probably wouldn't have even thought of making had it not been for this show. So that's probably my favorite part, is all the amazing people I've gotten to meet.
That is absolutely awesome. Thanks for sharing all that. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into today's bottom line up front. Here's the deal. Bottom line up front. You cannot let life get in the way of living. I get it. Life happens. Every day there are things that will go on around you, but like I always say, what you focus on gets results, whether big or small, positive or negative. You must make a choice to not let any of the negativity get in the way of living your best life. But here's the question. The big question is, how do you live your best life? And that's what we're going to talk about today. And that's what the bottom line up front is. So here's the thing. I also believe that mindset is very important. And I love that you talked about that. Mindset is extremely important. Everything that we say or do, I strongly believe it begins right there within our mind. And our actions are an extension of those thoughts or those ideas. So let me ask you this right here. When negativity or even pain enters your mind, how do you overcome those powerful, what I like to call objections, distractions, roadblocks, basically anything that gets in the way of your desire to get something done? How do you handle that?
So as for the negative thoughts, David actually taught me a great, easy tactic, technique. And I think Jim Quick describes these as automatic negative thoughts. And for me, it's just using the word cancel. Now, that doesn't always work, but it works a good bit of the time, especially like if I'm struggling with my kids, going to bed was a big struggle for a long time, was getting them to go to sleep. And I remembered I would walk up the steps and go, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. And I'm repeating this in my head. And I finally had to use what is negative habit loop triggers. I think it's the proper terminology. And what I ended up doing was anytime those words would start to kind of pop in my head, I would use it as a trigger to change the habit of telling myself I can't into I got this. This is going to be easy. Even if I didn't necessarily believe it at the time, I was replacing those so that at the very minimum, it would become neutral. And eventually what happened was when I would start to think that, I wouldn't get through several minutes of it. It would pop in my head. I would use it as a trigger, and I would automatically switch my thinking to, okay, I got this. It's not going to be that bad. They're going to go to sleep easily, and that's just one example as a parent. And so there's another layer to that. And as somebody who's dealt with a lot of trauma, there are things that will come up in different situations, different triggers will trigger a thought about something that happened in the past or a scent or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those recur a lot. And I feel like that's because we kind of still have to deal with it at a different layer or a level. Mm-hmm. But for me, something that helps in the moment, if I'm not ready to deal with it, like in that specific moment, is taking 6 deep breaths and repeating the word clear. And that kind of helps clear out the old stuff that keeps kind of coming up and recurring. And but it is important, I feel like, if that stuff is kind of recurring for you, to take a little bit of a deeper look at it and figure out why it may be still coming up, because there's probably something about it you still need to heal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are the two techniques. And really, I think this goes back to reacting versus responding. I have trained myself, and I say trained because it is a everyday moment practice of not letting things throw you off kilter. So mm-hmm. like my kid smashed a light bulb out. It's one of those fluorescent bulbs outside. I can tell you for a fact, 3 years ago, I would have been like, why are we doing that? Like yelling about this. And now it was like, all right, just don't walk out there with bare feet. We'll clean it up later. Like it was a completely different reaction because I know I've trained myself that worst case scenario, one of them's going to get cut. So don't go out front. Like, but nothing majorly bad is going to happen. It's just a pain in the neck to clean it up. And it was a lot of reframing for me. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, it's a practice. Like that's all I can really say is you have to practice not reacting. And that doesn't mean, because I've fallen into this trap, that does not mean ignoring how you feel about things. Because mm-hmm. I've definitely gone to the complete other end of the spectrum and almost numbed myself again to things that are like boundary crossing. Like people are always taking stuff that's coming up again, which is why I know I have to redeal with it again. I was taking my things off of my desk. They take my cup. They take my scissors. They're just whatever it is, because haven't been great. Well, one, they're kids, but I haven't been the best at setting this boundary and making it super clear that you do not touch this. You don't touch my stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas dad, nobody touches dad's desk, right? He's been very clear about what his boundaries are and, you know, that you don't do this. So again, that's something that I have to work on. But what I was trying to say is that you don't want it to slide the other way where people are completely taking advantage. People are trying to take advantage, and I have to change that because they can only take advantage of us if we let them. But if people are trying to take advantage of the fact that you're not reacting. Mm-hmm. And I think especially for kids, when you make this shift as their parent, it's a lot for them to get used to because they're like, oh, well, mom's not getting mad. We're going to try to get away with this and this and this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And I definitely dealt with that with a lot with my older kids because they were teenagers when I was kind of making this shift for myself. So that's just some tips to throw in there with that is to not lose sight of what is actually important to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, open it up for people to kind of walk all over your boundaries that you're working on.
You know, from the outside looking in, a lot of people really wouldn't understand what it is that some people are going through unless they're in their shoes and show that, you know, and have that empathy to really kind of understand what's really going on. And here's the deal. You know, I understand out there within the world, there's a lot of people that's struggling every single day. I can't relate. I just can't. I cannot relate to every single thing that people are struggling with. And there's a lot of things that people are trying to overcome, you know, because there's a lot of things happening right now. You could literally say that there's, you know, a lot of things and a lot of people are broken. And they really need to be fixed. But once again, that's really kind of a matter of perspective as well, too. Having said that, I believe that strong bonds are created through a shared struggle and people definitely need help. And that's something that you and I had a conversation about before, because I think that you and I, we can relate to each other. We can connect on that level of understanding. And I know that you have a very good one word, and that's unbreakable. So how do you show someone what it takes to be unbreakable?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I think it boils down to resilience. A lot of people think it means mental toughness, but I think it's allowing yourself to be broken down in order to heal, in order to become unbreakable. And it sounds kind of like contradictory, I guess, but without having things attempt to break you, you literally have no way of building resilience. There's no way for you. Some people are born more mentally tough than others. You know, it's in their DNA, it's in their personality, it is in who they are. But I'm sure there's been tons and tons of studies about, especially like entrepreneurs who come from, let's say come from wealthy families and who haven't ever had the struggle of having to make their own money, and they're handed, you know, all this money, and all of a sudden they don't know what to do with it, and it's gone, and, you know, the business goes under and whatnot. And then you take somebody else who's had to bootstrap every single step all the way from the very beginning, because they know what it feels like to be here. They're super extra careful, and they've built up all of these kind of toughness muscles to build the business and to keep it going. But that's because of experience, right? And I don't think that resilience is a thing that you just have. Like, you have to get it through experience. Like, there's really no other way to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill that has to be developed.
Exactly. Which is why I feel really strongly about teaching this, trying to teach this in elementary schools, and haven't quite figured out exactly how I'm going to do that. But at least making these elementary kids aware of why it's important to do hard things and to try to do them well. So yeah, I think unbreakable really was a word that came to me to describe lots of different types of people who've gone through lots of different traumas and or chronic illness or been diagnosed with, you know, a severe illness. Way back when I met Evan, and I was trying to kind of describe everyone. It's a long story, so I won't go into it, but I was trying to find one word that kind of connected us all. And my one word is actually spirit, which is, but I have an unbreakable spirit. I have unbreakable this. Like, unbreakable also describes me very, very well. So yeah, I'm not sure how to tell somebody how to be unbreakable except to go through shit. Like, it's, you know, overcoming. That's really what it's about. So.
You know, and I like that you talk about resiliency, because I'm a master resilience trainer. I'm actually a certified master resilience trainer. And one of the things that is in reference to resilience is the ability to bounce back. Okay, and that's exactly what resilience is your ability to bounce back. Some people have a much quicker ability to bounce back, while others struggle to bounce back. And the thing is, as long as you have the knowledge, the skills, and I like what you said right there, the experience. Because without those experiences, you really don't know how to deal with them and how to bounce back from those things that kind of tend to happen or get in the way. You know, life happens. No matter what gets in the way, you can't let that life get in the way from living. And some people let that get in the way in front of their ability to bounce back when things do happen, when the shit really hits the fan. When the shit hits the fan, most people quit. They give up. They don't even have the knowledge, the skills, or the experience to be resilient. So I believe that, and you hit on another great key point there, and that's teaching resilience to kids at a young age, teaching kids how to bounce back, because kids are highly impressionable. They look up to us as mentors, leaders, coaches, parents, whatever label we want to put on that. And when you teach kids how to be resilient, how to bounce back, how to look at a problem, solve the problem, and then continue on, that's extremely important. And I love that you touched on all that right there. So here's the thing. I
was just going to say, I think a big part of it too, as we're talking this through, is just perspective, right? And I think that's the one thing that we can teach kids is perspective about a situation, looking for the solutions and not the problems. That is very teachable without necessarily having to go through something traumatic or having that experience. We can teach kids, you know, how to shift their perspective. And I think kids, for the most part, are more optimistic and positive than we are as adults, because they don't yet have all of those negative experiences, for the most part, that have happened to us. So I think that's a key part too. And being resilient is having the ability to shift your perspective and say, even if you don't have the skills and knowledge, say, I've got this and I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. So there's some confidence in there as well.
I love that you said perspective, because I strongly believe that everything in life is learned, to include our perspective. And, you know, from the way that we walk, the way that we talk, the way that we do different things, the way we understand and interpret, that is based off of things that we have perceived or experienced within our life. And the thing is that, you know, what you teach at an early age continues until they learn otherwise. And exactly. When they learn otherwise, that's when they forget that the original things that they learned, and then they take on a new perspective on what it is that they learned. You know, here's the deal. A lot of parents out there really kind of shelter their kids and do not allow their kids to experience certain things. I'm like, you know what? I grew up with an old school dad. He was like, you know what? You need to experience that. You need to understand that. Whether it actually happens to you or not, you need to understand it. So that way, when it does happen, and believe me, some things will happen, you need to understand how to deal with that when it does happen. And I think that that's one of those things that building those resiliency skills comes with showing kids examples of things that could be a possibility. Hey, this might not happen to you, but if it does, here's how you can deal with that. And I think that comes down to awareness.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. That's a very good point. I was sheltered myself. I wasn't allowed to do most of the things that the neighborhood kids are allowed to do. Mm-hmm. And it was a protection thing. And I don't fault my parents for being the way they were. My dad, talk about old school. My dad was super old school. He was born during the Depression. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so like super, super old school. And that was something that I had to be very careful with in raising my kids, because especially having kids so young, my older two kids, I didn't want to hover, but of course I had the innate need to protect them. Mm-hmm. And I find myself now with my younger two boys, because there's over a decade between my daughter and my third child, my son. And I'll tell them something once or twice, like, you're going to get hurt doing that. And then he's very argument, very stubborn, like his mother, very persistent, like his mother. I'm going to do it anyways. Okay. Well, when you're busted up and bleeding, you know, I'm going to help you with first aid, but like, I have no sympathy for you. Mm-hmm. Like I hate to say, and I feel like sometimes people think I'm callous, but I'm like, I don't know how else to teach him. And if he wants to learn it the hard way, which is what I did most of my life, was learning it the hard way, that's how he's going to have to learn it. Like, that's just all there is to it. Now, obviously, if it's something extremely dangerous, I'm not going to let him do it. But, like, you want to climb a tree in bare feet? Go for it. Like, you know, you want to do this without that? Go for it. So, I've taken the same way your dad kind of did it and was like, these are some things that you need to learn. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah. My dad, he definitely was hard as woodpecker lips, is what I used to say. And he had a few things that he used to do and say that, you know, would probably scare the average person nowadays. But, you know, that's what helped me build that mental resilience, that mental toughness, you know, and that mental resulted in the physical as well, too. So I, once again, I'm greatly appreciative, and I've kind of tied up a lot of those loose ends with my dad over the years. And I'm still in contact with both of my parents. I'm thankful they're both still alive. And I've kind of tied that up. And I was like, you know what? I don't really care how hard you were back in the day. I'm appreciative of that. I'm thankful for that now, even though back then I was struggling to kind of make my way through that. I'm thankful for that now. And I understand it more now than I ever did back then. And I think that's really important as well, too. No matter what you're going through within life, it might seem hard or difficult at the time, but there's a reason why everything happens.
There's a lesson. That's something I've been learning more and more, something David taught me. Because I definitely, I was always a try me person, and I started to kind of fall into like a why me for a little while, because I was like, I couldn't figure out why all this stuff was happening. I'm trying not to swear too much. All this stuff was just like throwing after me, like one thing after the other. And I'm like, what am I doing? And he was the one, you know, really taught me about attraction and all of that different stuff. But now, again, using those automatic negative thoughts, it's not always super quick, but it's way quicker than it used to be. And it's like, what am I supposed to learn from this? Mm-hmm. Like when my machine, I was doing this major order and all this stuff is breaking and this is going wrong and I can't get that shipped. And I'm like, what am I supposed to learn from this? And how can I make it better for the next time? so that I'm constantly kind of upping my game, right?
Right.
So yeah, the lessons are super, super important. And it's very hard to see that sometimes when you're in the thick of it, you know? Right. So like, I'm not going to discount that.
You really got to learn how to kind of take a step back and take inventory of things. So shifting gears, here's the thing. I believe in opportunity, and everywhere there's opportunity everywhere. Within the last year, you know, sadly, a lot of doors were closed within the last year, but it led to the opportunity to where many new doors have opened. You know, and I believe that a lot of people have taken advantage of those new doors opening within the last year. And, you know, listening, I hear a lot of people talk about building a business. They don't know where to begin. They don't even have a product or a service to sell or anything like that. And I know personally how much of a struggle it is to really kind of get yourself out there, build a business, build a product, build a service. I have multiple myself. So, I mean, I'm kind of all over the place when it comes to different things. But you have a business, and I love your business right there, in which you create custom handmade designs and you sell them on Etsy. So how did you come up with the idea of Posh Notions, and what is the inspiration behind your designs?
So the name and the business were totally separate. Posh Notions was actually a name that I picked for my eBay reselling business probably 8-9 years ago. I don't know when my 8-year-old was a baby. So yeah, like 8 years ago. And it was really just describing the types of things that I wanted to sell as a reseller. I was, you know, cleaning up designer bags and reselling them for profit. And then in 2016, when I was pregnant with my super surprise fourth child, we needed money. Like, I'm not going to pretend that that wasn't the reason. Initial reason was my husband was working. I was disabled, and we just weren't able to make ends meet. My house had been in foreclosure once at that point, was about to go into foreclosure again. And so I started out with a decal cutting machine. It's called a Silhouette, and was going to make decals. My husband was competing on he used to do audio competitions. That was kind of his thing. And I was going to make decals for the guys on the team and then see if I could expand it from there. And then that Christmas, a friend of mine asked me if I could make a t-shirt for her kid. And I was like, I don't know how to do this. That's how a lot of my stuff has happened. It's like, I don't know how to do this, but I'll give it a shot because I have the material. I'll give it a shot. And I made this shirt for her son, and instantly fell in love with it, because as someone who's got rheumatoid arthritis and fibromyalgia and all this other stuff that affects my body, my joints, manipulating these little pieces of vinyl that are sticky and trying to put them on things, you're shaking your head. It's like a nightmare. But the vinyl that you use on clothing is not sticky until you heat press it. So yeah, you can move it around multiple times before you get a final press. And,
I have arthritis as well too, so trying to get my hands on things, I drop stuff all the time. It's crazy.
That used to be me. I used to drop things all the time too. We can talk offline if you want, but I cut some stuff out of my diet and was able to reduce that greatly, which is why I'm still able to do what I'm doing now. Because trust me, trying to thread a sewing machine with arthritic hands, that's fun. But it's way better than it was. So yeah, I started by saying yes to something that I didn't think I could do. Again, like the show and like some of these other things, and I'm finally connecting the dots and going, that's how I make my best decisions, is on the spot and when I don't think I can do it, which is kind of funny. But so I was like, I wonder if I could make this. And I tried making this, and I started making other designs and was like, learned how to do the design work myself, and started messaging or reaching out to like small, I think it was on Facebook probably, like, hey, I can make these. And I wanted to make gear for small businesses and organizations. And my first customer, I saw her pop on here. She's now my best friend. She owns a cleaning business, and I made her shirts for her cleaning business. And then that was it. That was like the end of, not the end, but the beginning of my offering my creativity and skills as a business to other businesses, and doing something a little bit different, because most of the people that work in my field do novelty items, which you see a lot of on my site, which is kind of where I started. But this gave me a direct purpose, really, for my business, was helping other small businesses brand and be noticed and
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing, word of mouth is very important. And I know that was a conversation that we had earlier about building a business, using your knowledge, using your skills, using the things that you're good at, and then getting the word out there. And I strongly believe that word of mouth is very powerful as well, too. And I also believe that testimonials are very powerful. And I love the fact that you share your testimonials. So talk a little bit about the power of word of mouth and testimonials within your business.
So I think it's super important, and I actually didn't realize this till maybe a year or so ago. Mm-hmm. I was just making people stuff. I was super excited to see them happy. And then it was kind of like, we went our separate ways. And a lot of them started, they would come back like, hey, I need more of these. I've got more employees. And I guess to me, because the products that I'm making are meant to last a long time, like they're not, I don't want to down screen print or direct garment, but those tend to, they crack, they peel, they fade, they do all these different things that the vinyl doesn't do. Mm-hmm. So it's meant to last way longer and to hold up to rougher circumstances. So I didn't think at that point I was going to really have repeat customers. Mm-hmm. But they did when they needed more, or they had an idea for this project, or somebody was having a birthday party or a race or whatever. I was top of mind because the stuff I make is quality. And they could see that, as especially working with blue collar companies, this stuff gets washed, it gets trashed, it's really roughed up. Mm-hmm. So as far as the testimonials, that was something I started doing after I opened my shop last year. People's testimonials and see what they think even 3, 4, 5 years after the fact about the products that I made them. Most of my business, so to your point, to your question, I think it's 75% of my business is repeat, and mm-hmm. 55% of it, give or take, is referral. Mm-hmm. So I've got, like, my friend I was telling you about, she referred me to another woman who was starting a cleaning business. This woman got her business off the ground. She was referring me to another woman that she knew was running a cleaning business. Mm. And I also find, and this is, again, my favorite part, is I'm not best friends with all of these people, but we have a working relationship where, like, I hear something's happening and I reach out and I'll say something. They hear something's happening, they'll reach out and they'll say something. If they need something that they're not even sure if I can make it, they come and ask me first, like, hey, I wanted to check and see if you can even make this thing before I go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's just, it just feels really good, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like the best, besides the fact that it's great for business, it just feels really good to know that you're doing a good job, right? Mm-hmm. That to me is much more fulfilling than selling a bunch of $5 items, you know, on eBay.
So, you know, having that repeat business is very important, and it really sends a big message because, if customers are coming back, that's a good problem to have, having repeat business and having, customers continuing to come back and then taking recommendations. So that's something that I'm always open to as well, too, is taking those recommendations like, hey, I know that you do this, but can you do that? You really kind of don't want to, let it become too overwhelming. But at the end of the day, without those customers, you're not in business. That's just the bottom line up front. Without customers, you're not in business. So it's very important that you keep those customers happy as well, too. So aside from the everyday challenges in life, and I know running a business because I run multiple businesses, I'm building new businesses, I'm partnering with people and building other businesses as well too. It's challenging. I mean, it can absolutely be overwhelming and kind of consume you within everything that you're doing. So as an entrepreneur, it definitely, being an entrepreneur really kind of has its own set of unique challenges and problems and issues and everyday things that you have to focus on. So let me ask you this. What is the most challenging problem that you've had to solve as an entrepreneur, and how did you solve that problem?
Most challenging problem, I have two. Is that okay. Cheating? So the first one is marketing. I am not a marketer. I am not a salesperson. And I know that it's not a good thing to tell the universe that, because it just kind of reiterates it. But they're just not my strong suits. Mm-hmm. They're not. And I'm learning to get better. But ultimately, I would love to just hire somebody to do my marketing sales because I want to make cool shit and that's it, and see people happy with this cool stuff that I'm making. That's like all I really want to do. So that's probably my business specific challenge. The other challenge is, I'm going to phrase this as time and space management, because I am still working out of my dining room in the heart of our house. We have 1,100 square feet, so it's not super big. There was 6 people living here up till like a month ago. So in the shared, almost the only other shared space that's would be the living room. Uh-huh. Our most shared space, I should say, is the living room. So we literally built in. But what that does is, again, it's helped me build resourcefulness. Like I was already super resourceful. Mm-hmm. Now I'm even more resourceful because I'm constantly, I'm going to move this over here and I'm going to put this here. So space, it's going to be amazing when I get my own place. But what the other part of it is the constant interruptions. So I was talking about adapt and overlap. I was definitely a person who hated, and I still struggle with this. I hate, hate, and I don't use the word hate very often, being interrupted. And I know nobody likes it, but for me, it was very much a hard thing because I had a lot of cognitive function impairment after getting sick. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago where that kind of started to sort itself out through some of the things I was doing. So anytime I got interrupted, I would get completely off track and I could not for the life of me or either remember or pick up or whatever very quickly what I was doing. Now it's I'm kind of a master at this because I've been doing it for so long. But yeah, those would be the two top things. It's just working from home with mm-hmm. little kids. Put it that way, and the marketing and sales part of it.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that you, so how did you overcome, how would you overcome that though? So, I mean, I think that a big part of overcoming that is, and this is something that I see out there within the business space, you know, like I said, within the last year, a lot of doors have closed. What I mean by that is brick and mortar stores closed. Businesses that could not figure out how to get online closed. Being able to, and I like what you said right there, resourcefulness is, you know, as well too. There's never a lack of resources out there within the world, but there is a definitive lack of resourcefulness, and that's the reason why businesses fail. People fail. Things like that tend to fail because of that lack of resourcefulness and resilience in order to bounce back. And I think resourcefulness and resilience kind of work hand in hand, especially as an entrepreneur, especially within business. And I believe that one way that you solve that is by being online, okay? Because you are a physical business. You physically make products. I wouldn't be able to do that. I respect you massively for taking that on. I couldn't do it, okay? Because I believe in, you know, I do digital training and marketing, advertising, things like that. So to have a physical product, I think that by you having a digital store, I think that helps solve that problem right there, because otherwise, without the internet, without that digital store, without that digital presence, I don't think, yeah, I think that you would struggle as a brick and mortar business to market, to advertise, to gain customers, unless you actually had a building in downtown wherever. You know, and I think that's how you solve that problem. Would you agree or disagree?
I agree, but I think it also takes a special skill set. So I do have online presence. I have a website. I have an Etsy shop. Etsy definitely was the driving force for what I was doing with the masks and the upcycling, because I didn't even attempt to put them on my website at first because I knew I wasn't driving traffic. And I knew that Etsy drives traffic and I could pay for them to drive more traffic through ads. So that was definitely how I tackled that part of it. But as far as marketing, I guess myself, and what I'm doing, like, collectively, it's just something, like, it's only me. And the time it takes to make a physical product and do this and do that and take care of my family and manage my illness and do all these other things, these things kind of fell on the back burner. And the times that I've attempted to learn about them, like, it just kind of, it's like glazing over. Like, I'm just like, there's a lot. It's a special skill set. That's why people get paid to only do like Instagram marketing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Social media marketing. And so it's something that I'm working towards and hopefully eventually we'll be able to hire. But to answer your question, how did I solve that? Because I didn't. Yeah, having an online presence and going to Etsy was how I solved it for the upcycling stuff. As far as how I solved it for the custom apparel, what I'm doing now is I'm cold calling. Like, well, I will be doing research for companies, small business or blue collar companies here in Pittsburgh is where I'm going to start. And I'm just going to pick up the phone and start calling people, telling them about because that to me, as scary as it is way less daunting than figuring out how the hell to make a great marketing plan for my website or my Instagram or whatever it is. And as for the other problem, it's going to sort itself out. Again, adapt and overlap, resourcefulness. It's just working itself out the way it can for now. Eventually, my youngest will also be in school. He'll be not this year, but next year he'll be in school. And eventually I will be able to have my own place as well. So it's just really bootstrapping everything from my attention to my time to my money until I get to that next level. And, you know,
being an entrepreneur can definitely be a daunting task. It's not completely difficult. It's simple. It's easy. Yeah, there's a lot of different things to consider and think about there. And I know myself, I have definitely embarrassed myself many times. I have definitely put my foot in my mouth. I'll share a quick example. I was on a radio show one time, and the very first question I completely screwed up. I was like, oh, my God. The rest of the show, I'm just sitting here just embarrassed because it was definitely a lesson in humility right away because I put my foot in my mouth. Let's just put it that way. And the radio show host completely put me right in my place immediately. So from there on out, I was like, oh, my goodness, all my credibility's gone. I lost it all. Like, I just completely embarrassed myself. So share me, what was your most embarrassing moment as an entrepreneur? Or, you know, what is your most embarrassing moment?
Probably blabbing to all of Instagram and Facebook and Twitter that I had won a TV show that I wasn't supposed to tell anybody about. I was actually for 3 days terrified they were going to disqualify me. Even my husband goes, were you really supposed to do that? I don't think you should have done that. Meanwhile, he doesn't do any, like he doesn't do social media at all. And I'm like, not sure. I got a phone call. Like I said, that was probably my most embarrassing moment. I think as an overthinker, I tend to be a little like I'm transparent and I'm honest and I come on these things and I love for it to be organic. And if I screw up, I'm at the point where like, we're all human. And if somebody gets really mad, I'm sorry. Like I don't, my intention is not to offend or to hurt anyone. And because I know that, I've been fairly lucky to not super embarrass myself. But I think that also kind of comes with experience, right? Because 6 months to a year ago, I couldn't have jumped on here with you and been like chilling on my bed, you know, just having a conversation because I'd have been very nervous. I'd been sweating to death, you know, but I've done it several times now. So it's less embarrassing. It's kind of just, again, perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I want to thank you for sharing all your valuable knowledge, your experience, your wisdom. Okay. And if you had one golden nugget, that one thing that you could motivate and inspire anyone out there listening to take action from your example, what would that one golden nugget be?
To not stop living life after diagnosis or trauma, that you still have the opportunity to, you know, live out your dreams, even if they have to shift and change a little bit. That's how I want to inspire others, is to take everything that I've been through and then I'm still pushing to achieve what it is that I want to achieve, even though it has shifted since what happened to me happened. And to give them some of that hope that, you know, you can still do things. You can still have a life. It just may look a little different.
That is powerful. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your message. So tell me, what are you currently working on and how can anyone want to discover more from you, connect with you?
So the big is scaling the custom branded apparel is part of my business where I make branded apparel for businesses and organizations. Basically, I call it logo gear. People call it promotional wear. And anybody who's looking for something like that, whether it's for a race or for a birthday party or for you know, their business or organization, et cetera, they can reach out to me via DM, either on Facebook or Instagram. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. And we can chat from and go from there.
Absolutely. Bonnie, thank you for your time today. I had a great time talking to you.